Hey friends, mark your calendars. The Intentional Motherhood Retreat is coming up October 23rd through 25th in Portland, Oregon. It's a meaningful few days to slow down, connect, and refocus on what matters most in your motherhood journey. Also, some exciting news, Intentional Fatherhood has officially launched on all podcast platforms, including YouTube. So go subscribe, check out the first few episodes, and share it with all the fathers in your life. For more details and registration info for the Motherhood Retreat, you can go to intentionalparents.org, or you can go check out our new website for fathers, intentionalfatherhood.org. Welcome to the Intentional Parents Podcast. Intentional exists to help parents in their God-given task to raise passionate Jesus followers. We exist to bring hope, help, and healing to families. Each week, we will talk about anything from parenting, marriage, lifestyle, and what it looks like to follow Jesus in our time. Intentional is made up of Phil and Diane Comer and Brooke and Elizabeth Moser. I am Brooke, and the funny thing is, we are all family. Elizabeth is Phil and Diane's daughter, so we're a family figuring this thing out together. We hope this podcast feels like you're sitting with us in our home talking about how to do this thing called life together. Elizabeth and I are your hosts. Let's get into this week's podcast. All right, welcome back to the Intentional Parents Podcast. Thank you to everybody who's taken a second to subscribe and to leave a comment and to rate. That just means the world to us. If you haven't had a chance to do that, would you just pause for 10 to even 30 seconds? And would you rate the podcast, even leave us a comment to let us know how we're interacting with you? It means the world to us. And whatever platform you listen to, by the way, you can use, whether that's Spotify or Apple or any other. Today, I am coming to you from a wonderful place in South Wales with our dear friend, Catherine Hill, who's been on the show before. Catherine, welcome.
Thank you so much. And can I say it's our joy to have welcomed you here to the UK. You and Phil, we just spent a couple of days together and it's been wonderful showing you all things British.
Oh, we have loved it. Phil's in the room. Phil, say hi.
Hello.
He's in the room. He's off in the distance. He's hanging with us praying. If you have any thoughts, you can just pop over to the mic, obviously. Okay. But all that said, I would just, it has been just a great time. We're here at Care for the Family. If you don't know, I'm sure I'll share it already, or I already shared it in the intro, but Catherine is the UK director for Care for the Family, which is a ministry that's all about helping the family in every arena that you could possibly think around Jesus and for marriage, for parenting, for grandparenting. Am I missing anything?
Bereavement. We do work with bereavement as well.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, we come alongside. It's quite specific, but parents who've lost a child or those who've been widowed young, we offer support there.
Oh, well, that's amazing. Well, Care for the Family, check it out. It's an incredible organization. But we also, we've been in the UK for just a few days now. And Catherine, we've been staying with you at your home with your husband, Richard. It has just been delightful. You have a dog.
Percy the pug.
Percy the pug. Phil loved that dog. He has such an affinity for every single type of dog in the world. But yeah, Percy the pug, we met him. But it's just been so lovely. And being here today has been lovely. And we're talking because you've written yet another book, which is amazing to me that even in the time we've seen you since last year, you've already written another book. So I'm really excited to talk about this today. But thank you for having us in your hometown. And Intentional's never been able to come to everybody from Europe. So wherever you're at, I just encourage you get a pot of tea and sit down and get ready to listen because this is going to be a very British edition, which I'm excited about.
Excellent.
So, but Catherine, you written another book, the title, and we'll leave this all in the show notes, but Born Free, A Call to Be Still, Know God, and Flourish in a Hectic World. The whole subtitle, the whole thing is obviously intriguing. And as anyone's even hearing, they're like, oh, yes, I need this. And so I'm really looking forward to talking with you about this book. And if you want to know more about Catherine, obviously, we've done other episodes where we've talked a little bit more in depth. So we'll link those in the show notes as well. But for today, I just want to talk about where this book came from for you. Where did it grow from? Obviously, a lot of what we write comes out of our lives. So I just love to know, let's start with where this came from.
this book is directly out of my life, actually, which is why in many ways it's been a joy, but also a challenge to write. So I think it's a journey, if I look back, that I've been on for a very long time. I'm someone who is quite purposeful and I like getting stuff done, and just that challenge and the tension of how we find that time to be still and know God and live from that place of stillness when we're busy parents or working or whatever the issues are. And actually, it was John Mark Comer, your brother-in-law, who did a talk at the UK Festival New Wine quite a long time ago that I think helped me crystallize some of my thinking. But then the thing that really I think was the catalyst was a question that someone asked me. It was someone who's a spiritual director, who's a wise friend. And we were talking about this context of being still and making time for God in our lives. And she said, what I'm actually have to confess, I thought was a really stupid question. I thought it was the kind of question that sometimes pops up on my social media feed and usually causes me to hit delete straight away. But she said, what kind of animal are you? And I thought, oh gosh, I have no idea how to answer this question.
This is what she really asked you. This.
She really asked me this
question. The
spiritual
director did.
Yes. So, and then I thought, well, I need to give this a time of day. She's wise. She's someone who asks really good questions. So I thought, and I remembered that a couple of weeks before, Richard, my husband, and I had taken our children to Bristol Zoo. Bristol is where we live. And we'd gone to Bug World. And in Bug World, there were these amazing creepy crawlies and spiders and all the rest of it. And then there was this cage of leaf cutter ants. And these ants were carrying leaves that were like 50 times their body weight. They were all sort of choreographed, busy, purposeful. They're quite small. I'm quite small. I've got quite a big capacity. So I thought, I'm an ant. And I remembered in the book of Proverbs that the ant is commended for her industry. So I thought, this is a good thing to be. Maybe it's a good question. And so I said, I'm an ant. But then she followed it up with another question. And it's the kind of question that, you know, when it something kind of takes you a little bit unawares and makes you a bit uncomfortable, because she said, if you could be any animal, what animal would you like to be?
Interesting.
Well, I don't want to be an ant. That's a ridiculous little creature.
Yeah.
And then I remembered that through Care for the Family, we'd been really privileged to go to South Africa. And we had been delivering parenting seminars. And then our host took us on a short safari. And there was this incredible moment. It was in the evening and we were on the game drive and the sun was going down and there was this gentle breeze, and our driver parked the Jeep and he pointed across just to the right, and there were all these zebra, beautiful zebra, just grazing, and it was an amazing sight. But then we realized he wasn't pointing to the zebra, he was pointing to something else. He was pointing to a lioness that was lying down in the grass, totally still, but just waiting for that moment to pounce, to go. And the zebra were completely unaware of her presence. And I remember that. And I also remember the next day we'd seen her again. So that night I could have watched her forever, but we had to move on. And she was underneath a tree the next day and she had all her young around her and she was fixed on the horizon. But not moving, but she wasn't being lazy. And it was what I've come to call the quality of attentive stillness. So she was fully alert. She was waiting for the moment. She was looking at what was going on around her, but she was still. And I thought in that moment, that's what I want to be. I want to be a lioness.
Oh,
so
yes.
That's where that began. I was already talking to my publisher, Stephanie from Muddy Pearl, about writing a book on this kind of subject. And I told her this story and she said, oh, you should get hold of an old book called Born Free. Now, some of the listeners may have heard of this.
If they
haven't heard of the book, they probably have known of the song. But it's a story about a lioness that was looked after by a couple who are gamekeepers in Kenya. And they looked after this baby lioness and they brought her up in captivity and then they set her free and she went up to have off to have cubs of her own. And it was the first time that anyone had ever managed to do that. to have
actually do
brought them yeah, up yeah, and then yeah. and set them free. So she said, why don't you see if you can get hold of this book and see if there are any descriptions of the lioness that you could include in Born Free? So I got hold of the book, and honestly, I couldn't believe it. It was written the year I was born. So it's quite an old book.
Wow.
But it's her diary. It's the diary of these people who brought up this lioness. So it's not a book about faith at all. And the first thing I saw on the cover, it said a lioness of two worlds. And I thought, oh my goodness, that's amazing, because we are citizens of the kingdom, but we live in this world. And then it was got even better, because I opened the cover and inside was a verse from the book of Acts, just written there, printed. And it's when Paul is in prison. And the jailer says to him, realizes he's a Roman citizen. And the jailer says to him, where did you get your freedom? Because mine came at a great price. And Paul says,
I love this verse.
I was born free.
Whoa.
So that's where it came from.
You know, it's so funny that you're saying that right now. Yeah, I mean, obviously, like you're saying it and it's now obvious, but it's like been hidden in plain sight.
Yeah.
You're right. Yes.
So that's how the book came to be called Born Free. That's how I thought, well, let me develop it. So it's got little references to the lioness right the way through, and different qualities. But actually it's all about in scripture how we can live in a way that we live fully in our citizenship of the kingdom of heaven and in the way of freedom. You are enjoying content brought to you by Intentional, a crowdfunded nonprofit that desires to help families and marriages all around the world in the area of discipleship and spiritual formation. This offering is completely free, thanks to the generosity of our growing community of legacy builders. Legacy Builders is a group of people from all over the world that gives monthly to fuel this dream that we have in our hearts of seeing discipleship to Jesus in the family become a way of life. A monthly gift of $5, $10, or even $30 can continue to fuel this ministry forward. Our dream is to invite people like you to join and partner with us at a financial level and to see this work integrated into families. So as you listen to this podcast, would you prayerfully consider joining us? Would you allow the Spirit to lead you, even if it's just a few dollars a month? Thank you so much. And may the Spirit of Jesus give you wisdom, clarity, and joy as you pray about joining us. If you want to join today, go to intentionalparents.org and click on Give.
So deeply personal,
yeah.
As I hear. I love the story of the lioness, and I love how you say zebra. We say zebra. You say zebra.
Zebra. Oh, okay.
I like it even better. No, I'd say, don't change what you're saying. So that's how it came about. I'd love to know, you know, being born free has a certain level of, you know, that idea, right? That comes with a certain level of living into something. So my next just thought and natural progression and question is, where has that become challenging? Where is it hard to live into how we were born? Because I think so much of the Christian life is living into who you already are, accepting who you already are, right? So talk to me a little bit about some of that. What are some of the challenges that you've experienced in this, and what are some of the things that you have been learning along the way?
Brilliant. I'd love to do that. And of course, we're all doing this in our different contexts, in our family context, work context, whatever. Maybe before I dive into the challenges, there was one other thing that happened that kind of sets that up.
Yes.
And it was in lockdown during COVID.
Oh.
And one of the things that's important in our family is our kitchen calendar. So it's on our wall, and it's like the motherboard of our family life. It's got everything written on it, you know, the work things, the tours, the coffee with friends, the doctor's appointments. All has to be. When our children, we got four children, and when they were at home, they were in big trouble if they didn't write on it if they were going to be out for a meal or were bringing extra people in for food or whatever it was. So really important, this calendar.
Yes, yes.
And there was one day in lockdown. It was just towards the end of the first lockdown in the UK. And I turned the calendar over for the next month. But instead of seeing 30 squares just packed full of appointments and busyness, there were these 30 blank squares, and my heart skipped a beat. And of course, COVID was so hard for so many.
Yeah.
And But this was like what the Bible calls treasures in the darkness. It was a little realization, I think, of something different. This was a different, it was like an invitation to a different way of living, which I began to explore. And I thought, well, how can we then, this is the big challenge, how can we keep this going? Because we had to slow down. Some people had to work really, really long hours. But for many of us, most of life just went online and there was less pressure in some ways. Not if you were homeschooling, I think.
But, oh, yeah. For many, it got worse before it got better.
I think that's for some people, many people's experience. Yeah. But it was really, for me, that challenge. How can we live at this slower pace, being present to the moment? How can we have that quality of attentive stillness when life is busy again? In the midst of the busyness, because it's most people can do it when you haven't got much on, but
yes,
but that isn't life. That's not real life. So
I'm so thank you for having so much intuitiveness to answer that first, or to say that first, because I think even that visual, do you still have that calendar at home?
We do.
Okay. So when we're there tonight,
you can
staying,
have a look.
I got to see
it's
this
jam packed full.
Yeah. Especially everyone's life is getting busier again, but that's just such a great visual of what actually happened in lots of ways. So let's maybe go to the next part then. So what is now for you, what is hard or what's challenging about being still? What makes that difficult for all of us? Maybe start with yourself, but what makes being still difficult?
Yeah. So I think there's so many things, but if I just pick, say, four things that for me, I think are the top of the list. So first one would be striving. So I went to boarding school when I was 10. And looking back, I remember that first day. I remember being waving goodbye to my parents and standing on the steps. And then in my hand, I had a little bag in one hand. And the other hand, I had this teddy bear that was much loved. Most of its fur had been worn off. And I remember then going back in and meeting the people who I was going to be spending the next 7 years with. And the first night being in this dormitory in the dark and cuddling my little teddy bear. And the matron put her head around the door and she said, "Oh, girls, Sarah in the next door room is crying because she's missing home. Does anyone have a teddy bear that she could borrow?" And in that moment, I knew what I was going to do. And I can still remember it. I remember handing over this precious teddy bear to Sarah. And it felt good in that moment that I had helped someone. But in hindsight, I realized something much deeper happened, because in that moment, I thought, I am never going to be the person that needs the teddy bear. I'm never going to admit that I miss home. I'm going to work hard and succeed at all the different things that there were to do at boarding school. And you know, I did it pretty well.
We have to do a side tangent. You were 10 years old.
Yep.
What was that experience like? So I'm thinking Scarlett's 11.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking of dropping her off at 10 years old. How long would it be that you wouldn't see your parents?
Well, initially it was about the first time you were there, it was like three weeks, 4 weeks. And then you could go out for weekends. But it's just a very different existence. Oh. I mean, some families have to do that, but teaches you some stuff, yes, but there's some other stuff as well. And one of the things that I think came with the package for me was this striving. So striving to succeed, striving to know that you can do things. And to be honest, as a way to navigate boarding school, it's probably not a bad thing, but it's not great when you take it into later life. So I was a lawyer, so I would be up late at night rehearsing my speeches to make sure they were excellent. And as a mom, I don't know if you have World Book Day. Do you have World Book Day?
I don't know if we do. Yeah.
So we have World Book Day in schools where the kids dress up in characters from books. Okay. So I would be up till the early hours making these costumes because they had to be the best, or beautiful birthday cakes, or, and I think the most telling probably is making sure I was doing my early morning quiet time perfectly, you know.
Oh, I see.
Because it all had to be done. So this striving, and in the Psalms it says, "Be still and know that I am God." And I know that's written in the context of war and trauma, but actually, I think if we're striving, we're putting ourselves on the throne. We're thinking that we can do it all. And actually, if we can step back and let God be God, then.
Have you heard this? So recently, that verse, someone gave me a coffee cup that says, be still and know that I'm God, right? There's another translation of that that says, cease striving and know that I am God. And so all to say, I'm just like, how perfect is that word to be still, to cease striving? I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but I just think that's a really important correlation that verse actually means, to cease striving, to stop the overwork, to stop the obsessiveness in some
ways. And of course, you know, we want to do our best job with our marriages, with our kids. Of course we do. So it's not saying we don't do that, but it's just when striving becomes the thing and it robs us, I think, of that piece.
Yeah. So first was striving.
Then second, I would say, is busyness. So just, you know, generally being busy. I think for me anyway, living from a need to prove myself can then lead to overcommitment and just stuffing too much in the diary. And I've got a big capacity, so I can sometimes do that, but we were actually chatting at lunch today, I think, about sometimes the people around us get caught up in that whirlwind as well, don't they?
Yeah.
I think that when you think about the wife of noble character in Proverbs, she's got to have been busy, hasn't she? I mean, if you think she's running this property company, she's, you know, got her family, all the different things she's doing.
Yes.
So I think it's when busyness jumps from an outward condition of the stuff that we're doing to our identity. So someone says, how are you doing? And we say, oh, I'm busy. And it almost becomes a badge of honor, I think.
That our schedule's full, that we're doing, that almost like we matter because we're doing.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. So Rob Parsons, who's the chairman of Care for the Family and the founder, he tells a wonderful story. He says, in the past, he used to deliver business seminars to business executives. And he would say to them, who does their best work under pressure? And he said, these captains of industry, they'd all raise a hand. And then he'd said, just look at the logic. So he says, imagine that Michelangelo was just finishing off the Sistine Chapel, or maybe Beethoven was finishing off the Fifth Symphony, and someone comes in and says, quick, you have to hurry up and you've got to get this all done by 5 o'clock. I mean, it's a nonsense, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And to have time to do our work, but also our relationships, they need time, and we can't do them in a hurry. That's that lovely quote, isn't there, from the book, The 3 Mile an Hour God, which says, I've probably got it here, hang on. God walks slowly because he is love. If he is not love, he would have gone much faster. Love has its speed. It's an inner speed. It's a spiritual speed. It's a different speed to the technological speed to which we are accustomed. It is slow, yet it is Lord over all other speeds, since it is the speed of love.
We have a new offering for you. If you would like to receive daily or weekly text messages and encouragement around parenting, marriage, with prayers and scriptures, click the link in the show notes and we would love to send those to you. Can't wait to connect more with you. I'm going to re-listen to this later and write that down. That was, yes, I love that quote. And love what that actually says to our moment in time. So even if you're listening right now, just hit the pause button, hit the 30-second rewind and listen to Catherine's quote just again, because I think that's really important what you just said. So that's incredible. Busyness. Yeah. And I would just say, what would you say to the young mom and dad that are listening that say, well, I mean, Catherine, I have to do it all. There's sports, there's education, there is my job, there's my side hustle, there is all the things that I need to do to support my husband or husbands, all the things I need to do so to support my wife and family. So maybe speak to that for a second. What's some encouragement maybe? You don't even have to give practical stuff, but what's some encouragement or perspective that you can give to those that say, well, I just can't let it down, Catherine, there's just too much?
Yeah, I think sometimes life is busy. And we have to, and it's fine to be busy for a season. And some seasons are busier than others. And for short moments, so before going on holiday, it's always a busy time, isn't it? If we've got a project deadline, and family life is busy, and we can't do a lot about that. But we can, I think, try and prioritize our diaries. So we're not just being busy for the sake of it. It's when it jumps from our diaries into our hearts, I think. So when our children were little, we got into this thing when we were doing after school activities nearly every single day. And most of them involved getting in the car and driving across town, particularly for swimming. Swimming was the killer on a Monday. And we had to drive in rush hour traffic with four children, and they all had different time lessons. So it was trying to give them sandwiches while they were waiting, or doing their spellings while we were waiting for the other lessons. And it was so stressful for everybody. And I came one summer, I made the decision that I would cancel all their after school activities.
Wow.
And only do things that we could walk to. And it didn't give me Mother of the Year award, but it changed our family. It changed our family life, and it changed the pace that had just, it was like we were on a treadmill and it was just getting faster and faster, and we weren't in control. And so I would say, just taking, what are the things we have to do? The swimming was ridiculous. It was across the city because someone had recommended this swimming teacher. Well, our children were never going to be in the Olympic team. They just needed not to drown. So we went to a local swimming place with probably not such a good teacher, but they can all still swim. So, So I think being in charge of our diaries and thinking twice just before saying yes for the sake of it, and maybe blocking time out that is family time, that's time if we're married, if we're single parent, maybe, or single anyway, time for friends, whatever it is.
I feel that so much. The very real pull of life just starting to happen to you, instead of you being in the space where you can wisely choose what your family needs. And it almost feels like, I mean, the only word that comes to mind is violent. It feels like you have to put the brakes on violently sometimes because it just keeps going and going. So we have striving, we have busyness. Was there anything else on that?
The digital age. I mean, this would be one I come back to. I read a book, well, I did a great, it was great talking to you about our podcast, Left to Their Own Devices.
Yes,
So it's not a subject that is close to my heart. But I think technology, it's part of our lives now, particularly since lockdown. But it's so easy for it to be a distraction in our walk with Jesus. Mm. And so there's something called the attention economy that people may have heard of, which, you know, the big tech companies, the commodity now isn't gold or precious metal, it's our attention. Mm-hmm. And all those things on our phone. The other day I was thinking about all the different devices on our phone that are designed to grab our attention. So notifications, the infinite scroll, the refresh button, the those little three dots, you know, when someone's replying. And
I know, those are weirdly addicting. Have you experienced that? Someone's texting you back and then the three dots show up and you're like, I'm staying on here till I see what they say. I found myself just unconsciously being like, it looks like they're on, you know? You're right. Good observation.
All those things. And there's a new word called technoference. Have you come across that?
I haven't actually. Technoference.
So that is when technology gets in the way of our relationships.
Of course.
And, you know, there's lots, lots to say about that in family life. But I think it can get in the way of our relationship with Jesus as well.
Oh, yes.
So our daughter was due to be having her third baby, and she had got a condition that meant she had something that meant that she had to go to hospital as soon as she went into labor.
Okay.
So we were on, you know, the starting blocks to be ready to go and look after the other two when she went into labor. So I had my phone by my bed, which was a good thing to do because I needed to figure it out straight away. But you know, the baby was born and he was about 3 months old before I realized this phone is still by my bed. And instead of, you know, reading a psalm or, you know, something like that before I went to bed, or praying first thing in the morning, the first thing I was doing was picking up my phone because it was there. So I think, phones are
technoference.
Big distraction.
Oh, yeah. And I just love the... Oh man, Phil, I'm going to give that to Diane. I'm going to tell her to use that on you. Phil, this is technoference in our relationship. Whenever you're on your phone, she's trying to get your attention. It's technoference. Anyway, I'm just teasing you, Phil. I love you. He did. He put his phone away from his. Yeah, he's doing it. He's doing it. Okay, so let's talk about you know, with that technoference. Can you tell me more? You wrote about this, and I'm just curious to ask you, but about Tempo Giusto. Am I saying it right?
Yeah.
Am I saying that right?
Yeah, you are.
Tell me about that.
I discovered it. It's an Italian phrase, and it means the right speed for the right thing. So when we talk about the striving, the busyness of life, and actually the digital age. You know, sometimes again, phones, they're useful. They're part of, they're part of living. But tempo juicer means the right speed for the right thing. So of course, often we need to slow down, but sometimes we do just need, I'm someone that I've got quite a lot of energy. I quite like having lots on. So I think for me, it was worth thinking, well, if I am slowing down, does it mean doing less? Does it mean doing things more slowly? Hmm. Does it mean doing less things? And so this idea that sometimes we do have to do something at speed, but other times it's really important to actually slow down and to take that time and not just make busyness or any of these things a habit that's just taken over how we live.
It's just interesting, the right speed for the right thing. That's just, when you think about that and actually break that down, that is really beautifully simple and smart and really helpful. Let's talk about the challenges of life that that stop us from being still. I want you to mention that because I think you have a lot to say on that.
Yeah, I think that so often life can throw us a curveball. And at Care for the Family, we often see more pain in a week than some people see in a lifetime from some of the stories that we hear. But those moments when we think that life has gone wrong, where there's illness, where there's tragedy, whatever reason. And how then does that affect our walk with God? And how does it affect us in terms of not being able to be still and flourish? I had it was a small example, but I was about to go on the stage to do a marriage event in a city in the north of England. Well, not quite, it depends where you live in England, but anyway, Sheffield.
Yeah.
And I was about to go on this marriage, to speak on marriage. And I was in the green room beforehand where we were just preparing. And I looked at my phone, and I have a little rule that I don't look at my phone before I speak. But on that occasion I did. And I saw it was a message from my son. And it said, and it had a photo of his feet, and it looked really dark. And I thought, what is this?
No.
Anyway, and it said, "Hi, Mum." I mean, he was working at the time in London, at Westminster, in the Houses of Parliament, which is where the UK government is. And he was working for a minister in the government.
Wow.
Anyway, it said, "Hi, Mum. Terrorists are in the building." I think it just said, "Terrorists in the building. Please pray." That was it. Love you.
No.
And that was it. And
that's before you speak?
Just what I was going to speak. And I had no idea really what the situation was. I could just see this dark thing of him under this table. Anyway, and in that moment, I guess, how do we respond in our hearts? You know, when we think the worst could happen. Now, in that situation, actually, it turned out okay. But you know, we know many families where things have not turned out okay. Mm. And how do they continue to live in that in that situation? But for him, what had happened was, anyone listening from the UK will remember, there was an incident, and a terrorist had driven a van into the on the parliamentary estate. And he had, my son was in a building with a window that just looked out under Big Ben, which is a big famous clock on the parliament chase. And he was just handing a piece of paper to the minister that he was talking to. And then he heard gunshot, and he saw a policeman stabbed, and he was actually killed. And then all this gunshot. And they thought that there might be terrorists coming into the whole building. Mm. Actually, it wasn't. And it was the security services. But in that moment, it was, you know, and what your heart does in those moments.
Was that so hard to get up and speak?
Oh, I tell you, it was hard. Never again will I look at my phone before going in. I think it made me think about how do we do that? How do we trust God when, you know, what we think, when how we think life is going to turn out doesn't actually happen. And you know, you as well will have had many families that you've talked to where they've just worked through the really, really tough times. Mm. So I think that would be,
We've had personally, I can attest to Elizabeth, and I could share those moments that are just when life doesn't seem to turn out to be fair in any way. And how do you keep wanting to and continue to follow Jesus, which is a big part of, I know, our heart for sure. Talk to me about, you know, transformation. Because when I think about all of this, this obviously transforms you in a deep way.
Yeah.
So talk to me a little bit about transformation.
Well, I think I'd love to just Psalm 131. It's one of my favorite psalms. It says, "My heart is not proud, Lord. My eyes are not haughty. I do not concern myself with great matters or things too wonderful for me, for I've calmed and quieted my soul. I'm like a weaned child with its mother. Like a weaned child, I am content. Israel, put your hope in the Lord, both now and forevermore." And I love it that these verses are kind of rooted in family life. Mm. And I used to imagine this mom with this tiny newborn baby and everything content. And then one day I thought, this is a weaned child. This isn't a baby. Mm. So this is a toddler. When Hannah took Samuel to the temple, he was weaned. So this is a child that's got agency. They can choose whether to be on or off their mother's lap, what they're going to be doing. Mm. And so I think that speaks to me anyway of our part in this, putting ourselves in the environment where God can then transform us, because ultimately this is God's work in our lives. He's the one that can change us and shape us. And just like the caterpillar makes its way into the little cocoon and then emerges as a butterfly, he can't make himself a butterfly. So I think always remembering that it's the Holy Spirit's kind work in our lives shaping us and making us more like Jesus that that takes the pressure off in some ways. We've just got to put ourselves in that space.
I was just mentioning before, but I was reading something this morning and there was a spiritual director who had said, you know, we can't make ourselves go to sleep. We can just create the conditions to sleep. And I think that's a great example of what you're talking about. We can create the conditions in our life to live into how we were born, to experience stillness, to experience all of that. Kind of moving to another thing that I know you talk about in the book, which is really helpful. And I kind of want to move to the practical side because, and what I'm hoping to do for anyone listening is to just tease out a little bit of what's going on in the book. So not only you get it and read it because it's powerful, but also because I think it's really going to be helpful. But just let's talk about some of the rhythms, you know, creating rhythm and routines. I would love to talk with you about that because I think that's a big part of it. And then I want to talk to you. We'll move on to like what is making space actually look like for you. I'd love to hear that from you personally. But let's talk about creating rhythms and routines because that's a big part of this.
Okay. Well, so I think many people may know about the monastic traditions. You have something called a rule of life.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. And the fact that rule comes from the word is like the ruler in your pencil case. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not rules. And it's from the word a trellis. So a rose would grow up, a beautiful rose or a plant or something grows. So it's a support. We, Richard and I, my husband, we become part of something called the Order of the Mustard Seed, which is part of the 24/7 prayer movement.
Yes.
And through that, we were encouraged to write a rule of life. So just write down what are the practices that work for you that make a good rhythm within your family life at that moment that will help you draw closer to Jesus. You know, it's the things that we do, the things that we love, I think, shape the people that we become. And so how can we live in a way that prioritizes those? And for some people that sounds a bit of a big thing to do, but I've seen these rules of life as like an infographic. I've seen it as scribbled little notes on post-its. I've seen it as something beautifully crafted in a lovely leather notebook. I think the idea is it's something that works for us with our personality and in our circumstances. And I'd love to talk about personality.
I wanted to hear, I was going to hone in on that, but you already went there. So yeah, let's talk about the difference of personality, because what might work for you, Catherine, or what works for Phil or Diane or Elizabeth, it's very different than what works for me. And I think we need some clarity around that, because I think it's really easy to just say, well, if Catherine says it works for her, then I've got to do this. But that creates, as we all know, just so much undue pressure on everybody. So yeah, give us some heads up on that.
Yeah. So I think this came home to us in the early years of our marriage. We decided to go away for the weekend and we had a little mini motor car, and in the back, the CD player, for whatever reason, so this is pre Spotify, this is going back a while, we listened to CDs, and the CD player was in the boot of the car. You call it the trunk?
Yes.
Call it the trunk? Yeah.
The boot's even better though.
Okay. In the boot of the car. So you had to choose what you were going to listen to before you set off on your journey.
Okay.
So I thought this is going to be a wonderful moment to listen to worship music. So I chose my favorite worship CDs, put them in the back of the car, okay. And then we get in, off we go on our lovely weekend. And I press go, and first of all, I hear Bruce Springsteen, and then Elton John and Queen. And I think, well, what's happened to Tim Hughes and all the ones I've put in? And Richard had gone, and he hadn't liked the look of all this worship music, and he just changed it for his own selection. And I'm ashamed to tell you this, but I thought at that time, well, I said to him, what have you done? You know, I thought we were going to listen to worship music. And he said, oh, I don't really like listening to worship music.
Yes.
And I thought, he is not really a Christian. That's what I thought in that moment. How can you not? And of course, he loves worship. But for him, that's not something that feeds his soul in the way it does mine. He has other ways. You know, he would rather be in a group with people discussing scripture or those kind of things. And it was a good moment for us to realize that we are all different and God's made us unique. And there are different ways that our hearts can best connect with him. And if we're trying to do it differently, it's like the story of David and Goliath, and Saul puts his armor on David and it's too big and unwieldy, and he needs to just get those five stones from the brook, and those are the things that work for him. So I think it's really key to find out what works for us, what brings us life.
If you're enjoying this content and you want to go deeper, we have an amazing resource that we want to tell you about. It's the Intentional Film Series, Raising Passionate Jesus Followers. Now, this is an incredible tool for you for spiritual formation in the family. And we created this film series to help parents in their God-given task to raise and disciple their own children. Now, our hope is that we're able to help you and give you some of the tools that I know we so desperately need as we're in the process of raising our kids, and Phil and Diane have actually raised their kids. This is a 9-session film series on the process of what raising a passionate Jesus follower actually looks like. There's some workable solutions in here. There's a bunch of wisdom from the scriptures, and there's a bunch of practical help in your journey as you are raising your children. We cover all sorts of things like parental roles, goals versus values. What is discipline versus punishment? How do I create a heart of obedience in my child where they actually want to obey? What does a heart of self-control look like? Or how do I even help my child in the process of character development? We cover that and so many more things. You can use this film series in a variety of ways. You can use it at your home, preferably with your spouse if that's applicable, with a group of friends or in your community, or even through your local church. All you need to do is head over to our website, intentionalparents.org, click on film series, and then follow the prompts. We have a bunch of other resources there that you can check out, but we do pray that this blesses you in your pursuit of raising passionate Jesus followers.
Yes. Any kind of like encouragement for some of those people who are in the middle of this, you know, middle of raising young kids, because I think that takes time. So the one thing I know is that as each year goes by, I learn something like, oh, this works. Like I can be kind of an all or nothing person. So as many other people in the room that are not you, Catherine, Phil as well, we're all or nothing people. We really are. And that's both beautiful and challenging. So I was like, I'm going to do silence and solitude. And I had done silence and solitude before, really. I mean, I had like maybe a day or maybe 2 days, which was a lot. And then I was like, I'm going to do 7 days. Do you know how hard 7 days is?
Very hard.
And you hear all these writers and all these people like, yeah, the longer you can go, the better. But they don't tell you like, well, what is it like to sit alone for 7 days? Like certain personalities, it's amazing.
Did you do it?
Oh yeah, I did it, but torturedly. It was not, honestly, it probably ended up at about 4 days of silence and solitude. And the last 3 days I called a friend that was 5 hours away, and he actually came and hung out with me, which was really sweet. And it was a really huge gift. That said, I learned a lot, right? I here's all these ideals from people that lived differently than me. And I realized, though, I like silence and solitude too. I just don't think for me, it there's a point where it's like diminishing returns. A couple days in, really rich. The last couple of days, it wasn't actually as rich for me. And so I found silence and solitude, and then really good relationship, like friendship, having something like that was really good. But for example, that takes a long time to discover. So I'd just be curious, do you have any just encouragement and or advice for those who are in the process of learning this about themselves, like figuring out how do I create my rhythms and routines? Just any encouragement along that?
Well, I would say start small and don't try and do the whole 9 yards.
Yeah, don't do what I did. Perfect. That's great.
And start with what works for you and what brings you life and what fits with your, if you at the moment are a young mom with baby and you're up all night actually be realistic about the times that you can spend. It probably looks different than, you know, before you had children, perhaps. so be kind to ourselves, find things that work for us. But I do think spiritual formation isn't pick and mix. And sometimes we have to do things that don't suit us quite so well as well, that stretch us.
Yep.
But if you're starting off, do the things that are a good fit and that we enjoy. A bit like going to the gym, we'll much more enjoy it if we find, or doing exercise, we'll find it enjoyable. If we find it enjoyable, we're much more likely to do it. And that's how we then strengthen and grow.
Yes, I know.
So I would say that.
And domestic, one of our books we were talking about, Domestic Monastery,
I love
Ronald Rollheiser, we were talking about that. We love that book. That's a great book. Read that. I think that just gives a lot of clarity and permission and perspective, especially to young moms.
Well, what I loved about that, because it's about, isn't it? It's about this guy, Carlo Coretti, and he goes, Carlo Coretta? Okay. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. And he's been a hermit, hasn't he, for about 30 years or something. And then he goes to visit his mom, and she's had 30 years raising kids. And he realizes that she is more contemplative and more loving than he is. And he realizes that she spent her 30 years with young children being interrupted, having the interrupted life. And she's learned to put others' needs before her own. And it's a lovely bit, isn't it? He says something like, I realized I'd been in a monastery, but so had she.
And
I just think the whole thing of interruptions.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a minute because we're here. We'll move on to the other things in a minute. But we're here, being interrupted, let's talk about that. Like the importance of, and I know you mentioned in the book, but the importance of being interruptible.
Well, Jesus was interruptible, and nearly all the miracles were done as a cause of whilst being interrupted. So he's going to heal Jairus's daughter, and the woman comes who's bleeding, and he stops and he heals her. Blind Bartimaeus calls out when he is on his way to Jerusalem, and he stops and heals him. Or he's delivering a great talk, a great sermon, and some guys lift somebody through the roof. And again, he stops each time, and somehow, because Jesus was busy.
His schedule was full, he was able to
be interrupted and put his needs to one side. And I'd love to be more able to do that. I think I so easily get preoccupied with my agenda and my plans that when there's an interruption, I find it hard sometimes to respond in love in the way that I would like to. But I love that. I love the story of the domestic monastery. Yes. And actually, it's in the interruptions that God so often speaks to us. Moses and the burning bush. I was thinking the other day, what if he'd been on his phone or, you know, distracted in some way and he hadn't looked up? He'd have missed it.
Man, how many things do we miss because we're on our phones? I mean, my kids... The other day, it's so funny. Like, I didn't know. I assume a lot of the times that, our kids are going to be just as addicted to phones as this generation, as the parents of this generation are. And they're, at least my kids, they're just the opposite. They're like, they don't want anything to do with phones. If the other day, Duke was asking me to look up something on my phone. So I was like, okay, it was over set on the counter somewhere. So he picked it up and he showed me, we looked up the thing together. And then I went to go set it down. I wasn't even thinking. I just went to go set it down next to me. I wasn't even on it, just going to set it down. And he looked at the phone and he grabbed it and he walked over and put it back. He's like, no, don't worry. I'll just put it over here. And I was like, what are you not saying by this statement? Like what, you know, but he wasn't trying to be rude. He was just saying like, no, let's just leave it over here. I don't want this to get in the way. And I think that that's a beautiful reminder to all of us is that there's a lot of things like that that can get in the way, but being interruptible, man, that is such an important reminder as parents, isn't it?
Well, and I think one way I've discovered that helps is to build a bit of margin in our lives. Mm. So at Care for the Family, we have a little mantra that if we're going to London on the train, we get the train before the train that gets us there on time. And it's meant that I have spent a lot of time sitting in coffee shops waiting for a meeting to start. But it's also meant that when something goes wrong, you know, we get stuck in traffic on the way to the station, when the train's cancelled, when there's a delay, that we're not then rushed and we do have time for those interruptions. So I've found that quite helpful, and that's something practical I've really tried to do is building margin, so I'm not just running from one thing to the next but spacing it out a bit.
I love that. I love that. So maybe what is creating, you know, you're talking about building margin. What does creating space look like for you? Because obviously, again, this is personality based. But I also think that as you have shared from your perspective, you're going to teach us a lot and help us kind of see what this might look like. So why don't you share that?
Well, caveat is, honestly, I am on this journey and still learning all this very much. So, but I think for me, two things. So first of all, planning time. And I love what Rick Warren says. He talks about we can divert daily. Okay. So spend some time each day, whatever that looks like. Reading the Bible, praying, just orienting our hearts to God. Then withdraw weekly. So I think that's talking about the Sabbath and making that a rhythm. And then abandon annually. So is there a way that we can get away for a weekend, go on a festival or a whatever it is, something once a year, maybe it would be, or your retreat, Brooke, your solo retreat, but maybe not for 7 days.
Maybe
not
7 whole days.
But some way. And I had a lovely chat with a someone, single mom, the other day, and she was saying, well, it's really hard for me even to get to the dentist, let alone abandon annually. But a friend had offered to have her kids, and she said, I couldn't even see my way to leaving the house, but I decided to ignore all the dishes and the washing. And I just spent time, and I did, she's an artist, and she said, I did something creative. And I read my Bible and I listened to worship music and I rested. And she said, I felt like a new person. And I thought that was lovely. So it doesn't have to be, you know, costing a lot of money or a lot of effort, but actually finding some space once a year where we can do that.
I love the simplicity of that. Divert daily, withdraw weekly, abandon annually. And they're all such a pastor move. Divert, 2 D's, 2 W's, 2 A's, like classic. But so that's really helpful. So tell us what making space looks like for you.
Well, I've got mine beginning with the same letter, unusually for me.
Yes. Oh, you do. Yes.
So for me to get the environment right for me, I found these four things beginning with C that for me are helpful. So the first one is calm. So we have so much white noise going on in our lives, and just finding some space where that isn't on, putting my phone away, just finding a place that's quiet. The next one I would say is comfortable. So we were laughing in our house. Someone once gave me an old, it's an old Anglican prayer store. It has to be the most uncomfortable piece of furniture known to man. And I thought when I got it, I'm going to have this amazing prayer life because I'm going to kneel on this place that all the saints of old have knelt on, and somehow I'll you know, imbibe some of their spirituality. But honestly, it nearly killed me. So that has now been relegated elsewhere. And I now have a special chair in my room that I bought specifically for that purpose.
Interesting.
And it's my place. It's my place where I can go. And I'm on the road a lot, actually, with my work. And so I try and find a similar chair wherever I'm staying, whether it's a Premier Inn, which is a little sort of hotel chain in the UK, or wherever it is. I try and find a space that's comfortable and try and make that work.
I almost stayed in a Premier Inn this trip. We'll be in London later, but I skipped it. But someone said, yeah, you should stay in Premier Inn. So they're good spots, you're saying. So anyone's in the UK, Premier Inn. So comfortable. So it's calm, comfortable.
Then the next one is concealed. So we often, I know you in Intentional talk a lot about letting our children see us pray and making visible the invisible and all that.
Sure.
But at the same time, you know, Jesus says, when you pray, go to your room, close the door and pray to your Father who's unseen. So I think that's talking about, for me, phone off, door closed. It's that kind of picture of intimacy. So that would be it for me. And then the final C is carefree. So just getting rid of where I can. There's some distractions we can't get rid of. There'll be a worry going around our heads or whatever. But if there is, well, certainly our phone, put my phone away.
Yes.
If there's a pile of admin or something, just moving it out of sight, or the washing or whatever. Yeah. And if there are things that are just buzzing around my head, I try and write them down on a piece of paper. So almost like just put that to one side for that moment. So it will be different for everyone, but those are four things that work for me.
I love that. Calm, comfortable, concealed, carefree. I wrote them down because yeah, that idea without distractions is the carefree one. I think that's a great place to start. And thank you for the framework, because I think that's a big part of it. So I would love for you to just share as we close. Obviously, please, this is just a little taste of all that you've been working on in the book. And thank you for taking the time to contribute and write it down and share your thoughts. And we'll make sure, as we said, go pick up that book. The link will be in the show notes. But I would just love to ask, as we leave, just any final thoughts on what we've been talking about. If there's one thing that you really want to make sure that people hear from this conversation, what's that kind of perspective or one thing you'd like to give?
I think it would be, we don't do this on our own. So we do it with others. Jesus, Father, Son, Holy Spirit, they're in relationship together. Jesus was with his friends, his disciples and the mm-hmm. inner three and all the rest of it. And so whilst, of course, we have our own individual relationship with God, this is something we do in community, which is where the church comes in mm-hmm. and good friends who will speak into our lives mm-hmm. that we can be accountable to. And we can do this mm-hmm. Together. So I would say that. And then really just within that God is more wanting to have a relationship with us even than we are with him. Mm. You know, he's waiting there for yes. us. And as we make the space, I think we can guarantee he will come and he will meet with us. And that is that's just a great way to live.
Oh, I cannot thank you enough. Thank you for jumping on the show today, sharing with us your life and your book. Would you consider just closing us in prayer? Would you just pray this in over anybody listening? I'd just love for everybody to just have this something that you pray over them as we go.
I'd love to. Thank you. Heavenly Father, we just thank you for each person listening. Lord, you know each of us. You know the context. You know the challenges of our life. And you are the one who calls us to walk with you, to walk that unforced rhythm of grace. And so I pray, Father God, that as we watch you, as we work with you, as we walk with you, you'd help us do that in the everyday things of life. And that we would find that you meet us there. And Lord, that it would be our delight to involve you in the everyday things of life. And as we do that, we find that we are living from that still place, that place of attentive stillness. So thank you, Father God, that you love to walk with us. And we invite you to do that. In Jesus' name, amen.